In our 1 o'clock hour, Ed Delaney, Democrat. State Representative, House District 86, that normally is a thorn in the side of the Republicans. And Drew, he is so much a thorn in the side of the Republicans that this year in the election for state representative, they couldn't find any Republican anywhere in the country to run against him. Any other time they would have had 500 Republicans running against you.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. He is also has filed the paperwork for an exploratory committee to run for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Indianapolis. And in the past week, Ed Delaney has been outspoken on the two pillars of Mayor Greg Ballard's anti-crime public safety program. One, he's got concerns about the whole preschool thing, and he definitely has concerns about how to put more police officers on our streets. Ed Delaney joins me live. Ed, welcome.
Thank you. And by the way, I don't have an exploratory committee. I just filed a regular old committee. I'm not exploring. I know what the office is, and I'm running for it.
You're doing it. You're not doing the you're not doing the preschool.
No.
You're doing it for real.
This is not a prom.
You've been there, done that, got the t-shirt.
Right.
First of all, why'd you put your hat in the ring? Why are you running?
Well, I ran for the city council in 1975, almost won, got interested in it. Brought a lot of lawsuits against Unigov because I thought there were some structural and legal and constitutional problems with it. Right. So I've never stopped being interested in Unigov, and you'll get a kick out of this. The first call I made after I filed my papers, I called Bill Hudnut, the Republican, to tell him that I was running, and he was quite encouraging. I've known him a long time, fought with him, and respected him, and I just want to make Unigov better, and I think this is my chance.
Is one of the problems, as you see it from your perspective, when you mentioned Bill Hudnut, that we don't have the leadership in the city that we have had under, we can argue about Unigov all day long, but we've had great leaders even going back to John Barton. I wasn't here during that time, but I've heard a lot of great things about him, that we don't have the leadership in the mayor's office that we had with John Barton and Dick Lugar and Bill Hudnut and even Steve Goldsmith and Bart Peterson.
Yeah, I think the vision thing is lacking. There's two things. I don't think that the present mayor has the vision or the long-range goal, but also he's suffering from the fact that Unigov is coming up on 50 years. The problems that were baked into the system and that have been created by property tax reform and so forth are coming home to roost, and I don't think he's up to the job of dealing with these problems.
He went on the south side last night down to the Republican base in Perry Township to talk about both his preschool plan and his put more cops on the street. And reading between the lines in the media coverage, it sounded like he did not get a overwhelmingly positive reception from an area that should be normally supportive of a Republican mayor.
Well, Amos, this is tough for me to say as, I guess, sort of a politician, but I don't think the mayor's office is particularly partisan. Mm-hmm. So it's concerned with service and what you're getting done and what are my taxes? Do my garbage get picked up? And so on. So it's not surprising that even in a Republican area, if you have a bad idea, a Republican mayor will get criticized. It's a different game. And it's one that the mayor is finally getting the normal treatment as opposed to the sweet cakewalk he's had for the last few years.
Let's move to the two major pillars of his plan. One is the preschool. Everybody in the abstract thinks, yes, we ought to have quality preschool to prepare our kids for kindergarten and quality kindergarten to prepare them for 1 through 12. What are the concerns that you have with the program?
Well, I'll give you one that may sound kind of strange coming from a Democrat. But I'm reluctant to create a welfare program. Mm-hmm. I do want every kid who can't afford it to have an opportunity if their parents want to go to a preschool. Mm-hmm. I want them to go to preschool, though, with everybody else. Mm-hmm. In other words, I want to say, if you can pay half, pay half. If you can pay nothing, pay nothing. If you can pay 100%, I want to have a school that the kids whose parents can pay and the kids whose parents can't pay will all want to go to. So that's my first objection and my broadest objection. Because in the legislature, what I learned is welfare programs always get looted and attacked. Mm. We need a program that draws in everybody in the community to say, this is a city which has a wonderful preschool program available to everyone that you can be proud to put your kid in.
Is it something that should be, if we have a quality preschool program that everybody wants to put their kid in, should it be run by a separate entity? Should we just say, here are the standards, and if a school meets that standards, this is where you need to go, and if you need a subsidy, the subsidies are there for you?
We need a structure, and we don't have one, and that's one of the problems with the mayor's proposal. This can't be done overnight. He's got a political problem. He's got too much killing going on, and he wants to say he's doing something. And as you joked earlier, He wants to prevent the crimes that the four-year-olds are going to commit in 10 years. And he's right that we need to have preschool to help prevent those crimes. But we need to do a serious job. Remember, these kids don't have to go to school. Mm-hmm. So it has to be universally available, but not universally mandated, A. We need to take advantage of the private and the not-for-profit and religious resources. I don't see any religious problem with a four-year-old going to a school. My grandkids go to Beth El Zedek, and we're not Jewish. So, you know, that's not the problem. Mm-hmm. So we need to have a method that whether it's the public school, in my view, the public schools must be in on this, mm-hmm. whether it's the public school, the religious school, or the not-for-profit, all of them have certain standards, and they have a response to an organization. That's the problem with the charter schools. Mm-hmm. There's no person to whom you answer. So they all need to answer to one person as to their finances, their integrity, their health, you know, their healthiness, and whether the kids are getting an education. After that, they can structure themselves however they choose.
There are some that say that government's role in education is at the state level. It is mandated in our Constitution that the state shall provide. I think the languages are free. Uniform system of common schools. They never defined whether that was, you know, K through 12, right. 1 right. through 6. So theoretically in the Constitution it could mean preschool. The folks from Lilly were here the other day saying that ideally the state ought to be taking up this burden. You're at the state level. Your sense that your colleagues are ready to do that?
They will never, and I would never support mandatory preschool. Okay. Parents, if we want to have their kids at home, that's fine. Or if they want to go to what amounts to a babysitting operation, that's dangerous for the kid if the other kids are going to a serious preschool. But we're not going to mandate it. So the question is, will we fund a statewide system mm-hmm. that allows a lot of local variance? Right. I'm very happy to see that we're applying for a $250 million grant from Washington to structure and set up a preschool program. And that's another reason I think the mayor is jumping the gun. We'll know in December if we get that. If we get that, there'll be a state program.
Right.
One of my nightmares is we go over to the state house and say, well, we've got a wonderful program. We got $5 million, which is too little, and we're all happy and fat and dumb, but could you give us money? I know what they'll say over there.
I know it too.
They say,
you got yours. We're going to get ours.
Exactly. So,
and they're absolutely right.
Yeah, so that discussion is not a wise discussion.
Are you also concerned that that the mayor's plan focuses on people who might commit crimes in 2021, 2023, and not augmenting resources for those that might commit crimes in 2015, 2016?
I don't think that's his intention, but he's played a game about what the tax source for both these programs is, and he's switched them. Mm-hmm. So last year, if I've got it right, we were going to get rid of this homestead credit and give it to the police. This year we're going to get rid of the same credit and give it to the preschool. That was a mistake. The funding mechanism should not be confused with the program. The public, in my view, if they're told you got only two choices on earth, put $5 or $10 million into preschool or $5 or $10 million into more police officer, a more public safety, I know the choice they're going to make. It's going to be for public safety. Mm-hmm. Don't get them confused. We got to keep these things separate, which is another reason I think we need to slow down the pre-K a little bit. This charter school is a good example. We don't have a structure that organizes it in a way to prevent problems. I don't want to do that again with preschool. I want to have a structure in place that says this is what we expect, and when we don't get it, this is what happens. So he's got to stop the confusion. It's not helping either issue, in my view.
The mayor's chief of staff, Ryan Vaughn, tested a line on Twitter with me last week, and the mayor actually uttered the line a couple of times last night at the event down on the south side at the, I think it was Presbyterian Church down in Southport, that it is the working poor who are providing the dollars, subsidizing wealthy homeowners through the local homestead tax credit.
Wow.
Have you heard that?
I'm very happy to hear the Republicans have identified the existence of the working poor and that they want to align with them. So that's the good news. The system is very strange. If what they're saying is that wealthy homeowners with wealthy houses do better under the property tax system than poorer people, I'm not sure that's exactly right. I don't know what he's saying. It doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound very Republican either.
239-1310. Ed Delaney is a state representative. He is running for re-election in House District 86. He's got nobody running against him. But he's also a candidate for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Indianapolis in 2015. Let me go to Brian. Hi, Brian.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good, sir.
I
Go ahead, Brian. Did we lose Brian? Did the NSA tap tip in? See, Ed didn't even know the tap tips in when you were
I was in the Naval Security Group. I'm familiar with these things.
But on police.
Right.
Is part of the problem with the mayor's plan, even in looking at his own plan, as I remember the figures, it was going to be adding 280 police officers over 4 to 5 years, and he was assuming 160, that they would lose 168, I think it is, 124 officers, so the net would only be like 160 or 120. Is that part of the problem, that any scenario he comes up with is not putting enough bodies on the street?
Yeah, he's... wants to end at a number lower than was in place when he arrived in the mayor's office, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The commission that studied this year, which was very, I think, cautious, mm-hmm. would have us have a modest increase over what we had in 2007. I think that's what the public expects. So, yeah, his ambition is too low. He's afraid, and this is understandable, that we can't finance this. Mm-hmm. Well, we have to find a way to finance it. I think the answer is at the other end of Market Street at the State House. All the cities and all the counties in this state are hurting because of the property tax caps and because we got rid of the inheritance tax and so on and so forth. And we got to get adult about this and get some money.
Does it hurt the city, the fact that while the other mayors in the city kept coming down to the State House the last 4 or 5 years, talking both to Democrats and Republicans in the legislature, saying tax caps were hurting them, the only major mayor that was never doing that was Greg Ballard. He's saying, hey, we got this. We can handle this.
My argument always was that he went to the State House and asked for the wrong things. He asked for more power for the mayor, remove the at-large councilman, give him authority over more organizations. He was not asking for the right thing, which was financial assistance or underpinnings from the place that has the revenue. Mm-hmm. We're sitting on a $2 billion reserve. When I got into office, we had a $600 or $700 million reserve, and we survived the Great Recession. Let me repeat that. With a modest surplus, we survived the Great Recession. So now that things are getting better, we need a double or triple surplus. I don't get it.
We got Brian now back on the line. Brian, you're on the air. What's up?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions. I was wanting real quick.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know Mr. Delaney's stance and also the possibility of him introducing a bill or a question, a up and down vote on the dissolution. Dissolvement of the CIB, the Capital Improvements Board. As a taxpayer of the city, I'm sick of people coming asking me for more, and you're doling out of the millions and billions to the Pacers and the Colts. That's real tired now. I'd also like to know what his stance is, or the possibility of getting a bill introduced with the control on these TIF districts, because there again, that's minimizing funds going to public safety, libraries, and schools, and also looking into, I know they can only do so much with the municipalities, but also the Downtown Inc. You know, they're changing names, all these dubious aside or affronts. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican.
Right, you put your finger on a couple issues that are related. Okay, first of all, we have a structural problem. My friends in the legislature basically set up the structure for the CIB, and they do it so that we have some power at the State House to rein it in or to give it a little more power, and there's a lot of negotiation there. That's a dangerous system because divided authority is always dangerous. Somebody will manipulate that. So either somebody at the State House is manipulating it or somebody on the CIB or the mayor. So that's the first problem. We don't have our hands on it, okay? We don't really control it. The mayor sort of says, well, I'm not really responsible. The state legislature says, well, we're not really responsible. So that's the first problem. The TIFs are a related issue. Each one by itself seems to have an attraction or a purpose, but some of them end up having fulfilled their mission and sitting on millions of dollars. We finally noticed that, and we started grabbing that back. We have to ask ourselves whether this is the wisest use, and also one of the questions the mayor's never asked. At some point, the development has a momentum of its own. I see that down off Massachusetts Avenue. At some point, a developer ought to walk in and be told, sir, you're going to build that building whether I give you a tax break or not, so why don't you just go build it? That's a tough conversation. I remember having a conversation with Bill Hudnut years ago, who said it's always a lot more fun to build a new fire station than to close an old one. That's the problem. So we all like these press releases. I just created a new thing down on Mass Avenue, and I'm giving it a TIF district, and, you know, isn't this lovely? We don't need to do it, it seems to me, in every case. We need to use some judgment. So I think your overall question is, do we have control? The answer is no.
Is that going to be one of the issues next year?
I think it'll clearly be an issue. Now, here's the problem. You can't be opposed to development. I'm not opposed to development. The question is, how do you maximize the development at the minimum cost of the taxpayer? And how do you negotiate wisely with the free market, with the private sector? And I don't think we got the power to do that right now.
Would you advocate, if you're mayor, I've always argued that a mayor ought to say, you know, somebody comes in and wants to do development and wants to add another store at Keystone at the Crossing, like we need another one at Keystone at the Crossing or at Castleton. I'm from the school that says, okay, you want to go out there and build that? That's fine, but we have this neighborhood in Mapleton Fall Creek that needs some development, so I may hold you up a little bit, but if you kind of help me out and maybe put something smaller or maybe a different division of your company and put some development down there, then all of a sudden you'll have your permit in 5 minutes. And I know there are some cities and mayors that you help this area, and it's not illegal. It's how cities run.
There's actually a model that's got the right idea between Broad Ripple and 38th and Illinois and the Tarkington Park.
Right.
So the TIF for Broad Ripple is going to pour money into the Tarkington Park, hoping to revitalize that little commercial area along Illinois Street north of 38.
Right.
I'm not sure we got the numbers right. I'm not sure we're giving it enough on the south end, but the concept is right. Mm-hmm. So the TIF district looks very strange. It looks like a bent barbell with one part up in Broad Ripple and the other at 38th and Illinois. So we can do these things. I don't know if the TIF district's the way to do it, because that gets very complicated, as opposed to a one-time deal. You build something at 38th in Illinois, I'll get you a permit.
Is it also important for a mayor to leave the city, and when you leave the city to go get jobs, you actually bring the jobs back? Is it more important to go to Europe and have a good time, or go to Bentonville, Arkansas, and tell Bentonville, we need three or four more Walmarts because that adds jobs?
Well, I'll just make this point. If I go to Europe any time in the next 6 or 8 years, I'll pay my own fare. And if somebody wants to come along with me, they better be related. Now, if some business people show up in Munich, I'll go talk to them, okay? But I'm out of that game. I think that game destroys public confidence. We need to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't go to Europe or Japan or someplace. I'm saying you ought to pay your own way because you think it's worthwhile.
Isn't it also, if you go, the deal's already done before you go. You're just going there to solidify the deal, sign the contract, take the pictures, and come back and say, here's 200 jobs, 100 jobs, 50 jobs. Bingo. We signed the deal, and now we're telling you about it.
If you don't have the deal signed before you go, you're not very shrewd. On the other hand, there are times you want to go. For example, I'm familiar with our history with Japan. There's a value in the governor or the mayor going to Japan, where we have many long-term relationships and just shaking hands and showing interest. There's some value in that, but that shouldn't cost the taxpayers money. The dilemma is, if the mayor is presumed to be having fun, if you're going to have fun, you ought to pay for it. Now, there may be some pain on the trip, but that's life.
Let me go to Trey.
I got one other question.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brian.
My other question is what can be done on your side with regards to, I watch Channel 16 a lot, but I noticed there are certain members, Carolyn Mays, on the Indiana Regulatory Commission and also on the CIB. It seems to be, a anomaly maybe, but, the entities that dole out money, the same people are on the same board. So can we put a stop to that?
Well, I don't know where there'd be a conflict between those two, and I'm a friend of Caroline, so that makes it a little bit tough on me to say much more than that. I don't see the conflict there, but there is a problem with people sitting on multiple boards. There is that problem, and there's a problem. We have an inspector general who, he's in charge of whitewash. He's got a bucket of white paint sitting next to him, and that's what he does. So you're on the right topic. I can't address the particular concern, but you're on the right topic. We have a big problem there, and I hope we get dealing with it.
We're with Ed Delaney. He is one of the candidates running for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Indianapolis next year. And see, this is unusual because we're in the middle of a regular campaign this year.
I know.
Is the mayor campaign getting ready to be like president, where it's like 2 to 3 years?
There are hints of that.
There are hints of that? When we come back, we'll ask, is that good for Indianapolis to have a year and a half long mayor's campaign? It's Afternoons with Amos after these.
Hello, I'm Maxine Bryan, and you're listening to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Light.
With Ed Delaney, he's running for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Indianapolis. It used to be mayoral campaign started around Valentine's Day of the year that the mayor's election would be and run from basically Valentine's Day or whenever the party slated all the way till November. Now you and Joe Hogsett and Frank Short have been out here most of the year, one way or another, kind of talking about this. Is there a danger to having, or is there a positive to really starting to talk about a mayoral election the year before?
Well, I think it's a problem of necessity. The requirement to get known and to raise money, especially the latter, is critical. Mm-hmm. So you have to start early if you're going to do that, especially when the mayor is sitting on, I don't know, half or three quarters of $1 million that he's accumulated over the last few years. Mm-hmm. So any rational person says, I got to get going. Mm-hmm. Under our law, you can't take a campaign contribution unless you file a committee. Mm-hmm. So at this point, it's sort of forced on you to do that. Now, how active you get is up to you individually. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to get informed. I spent a lot of the spring getting informed. I think I know what the issues are. And it's important to make a network of friends and so forth and get going. So there is a problem. Some people who are running hard this fall are saying, would you get out of my way, please? I'm trying to do this November's election. Mm-hmm. If we had more serious and more powerful elections, for example, if we had a U.S. senator up, right, or a governor up, this would be a different story. But mm-hmm. we don't have a major race
statewide, that's right.
Statewide, yeah. And there's too many uncontested races. So I think the things fall together. I'm not upset about it.
As you've gone out into the community and we're getting ready to go into festival season, what are people telling you? As you go out and you're sitting in people's living rooms and dining rooms and you're at the diners and you see folks in the Targets and the grocery stores, what do people tell you?
There's only one dominant issue, which has been the crime, the level of killing involved in the crime around here. That's the number one issue. People gripe about the streets, which have really not been improved that much over the course of the summer. So that's sort of a long-term burr under the saddle, but I've gone door-to-door for other candidates who have competition, and I ask, what's the issue? And it's crime.
What would a Mayor Delaney do?
Well, remember, I'm running for mayor. I don't want to be the chief of police or the prosecutor, okay? So my job is to set up a structure and finance it so that those people can succeed. That would be my job. And that's our biggest problem. We don't have a structure that finances and supports them. You know, so I don't want to hold those offices. I'm not running for prosecutor or chief of police. I am running to be the person who can set up a method to raise the support that's needed and make the public feel comfortable with the safety, with public safety.
Is part of this campaign letting people know if this is what you really want, if you want more police on the street, if you want police to really get out of their cars and not just in the video and the T-shirts, but to walk the blocks, to ride the bicycles, to make those connections, that we might have to pay more for that?
That is part of the educational process. That's part of the discussion. If people value it, they have to run the risk that we may ask more of them. But we can't ask for a penny more from the public until we use the resources we have, whether it's the state surplus or wasted money here locally. There's a lot of waste going on.
There, if you remember, and it started in your neighborhood up in Meridian, Kessler was when the revolt of the homeowners back in 07, oh my goodness, we're paying too much property taxes, and that's when the caps hit. Now at the same time, Mayor Peterson, because we had a crime wave, raising the public safety tax 65.65, and many are asking, wasn't that money supposed to pay for more cops on the street to bring us up to 1,700 to 1,800 authorized strength? It was supposed to also include the $5 million in community grants. Where did all that money go if we got less cops and we're only spending $2 million on the community grants?
You've asked my poor staffer, Anastasia, who's sitting here now, to do some research on that. I can't directly answer where it all went. I know we've reduced the police essentially every year since then, so we don't have the force that we had back then. Mm-hmm. I know we gave up on asking for federal grants because we didn't think we could sustain our obligations under those grants. I think that's a terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. I know we gave up training classes, which costs money, but that's the only way to get young blood. I mean, nobody ever talks about this. Our force is not only smaller, it's older. Mm-hmm. That's the way life works. Right. If you have no new blood, mm-hmm. everybody else gets older by a year.
239-1310. Back to the phones and Dave. Hi there. Dave? Okay, Marvin's trying to talk to Drew too much. Dave. Hi, Dave. Dave?
Yes?
You're on the air.
Thank you. I just want to let the gentleman know that I'm not necessarily a Republican. I'm a conservative. And there are a lot of conservative ideas how to get this city moving in the right direction. I think one thing is to use more of a pro-growth policy instead of pumping up more taxes. And the more people that are working, the more money coming into the city. And, you know, if you streamline the regulatory process and make it easier for people to go into business and expand their business, you can grow this economy. And as far as the preschool goes, I don't think I'm necessarily against it. I'm not necessarily for it. But what I would be for would be finding out the children that are in IPS right now that are two or three grades behind in reading, math, and vocabulary skills, and use that money to get them up to speed. Mm. I think it'd be wiser money spent that they would be able to get out and get a job. I think I've seen studies where preschool only helps up to about the third grade. I'm not saying it's not necessary. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying with a finite amount of money that the city has, I think it would be far better to get the students that are falling behind and falling through the cracks up to speed than to do this on pre-K. But I wouldn't be opposed to in certain areas of the city where children are behind even starting out for kindergarten to do something like that. But I think the children that are at risk are the ones that are in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade. They can't read. They can't multiply and add. I think those are the students that really need the money spent on them.
Well, under our state law, we have a pretty tough test at grade three when you complete. And if you're not cutting it at that level, you're supposed to go back and do it over again. Mm-hmm. That's tough to enforce, but that's there. So we've paid attention to that. And I think we'll continue to. Now there's this great urban legend that the benefit of preschool drops off after three or four grades. My understanding is it's a little more subtle. The academic benefit, or the kid who leapt ahead because of preschool, is no longer leaping ahead at grade three or four. That's because he's now in the herd and along with the herd. Mm-hmm. But in terms of his social development and his moral development and his civic development, he is better off. He is less likely to commit a crime. If he's a young woman, he's less likely to have a child out of wedlock at a very early age. So there are social benefits as well as academic benefits that come out of preschool, which is why I support the idea. On the regulatory thing, it's very easy to form a corporation in this state. Our tax rates are very low on the corporations. We don't have a lot of obstacles. Our environmental enforcement is at the low end of what it is nationally. So I don't think we can deregulate
I talk to a lot of small business owners. My son is one.
Okay. I am one.
And I would beg to differ that things could be, you may say it's the easiest place. Maybe it is. But it's not as easy as it could be.
Are you talking, Dave, regulation at the federal level or regulation at the city level?
No. I'm talking, you can't do anything with the Fed. Okay. The EPA is what it is.
Okay.
But I certainly think the state could really help their situation by, streamlining their process to get people through and not make it so overwhelming for a young person trying to get in business.
Help me. A permit? What are we talking about?
Yeah, permits. Permits are some of the things that that you have to have.
You're talking environmental permits or zoning permits? What kind of permits are you talking about?
Well, zoning permits are can take a lot of time and a lot of money.
The city does those. The city does those, and we have reasons for those rules, and unfortunately they're complicated.
That.
And the problem is you get objectors there. You want to do something you think is wonderful. The guy down the street doesn't want you there. And we have to sort that out. The city doesn't go out picking all those fights. Those fights are picked by the neighbors.
Let me put it, because I have heard some of this, Ed, as it relates to code enforcement.
Okay.
And because code enforcement now funds itself, by writing, you know, code enforcement tickets. Sometimes when you do it that way, there's the tendency, let me go around and make it difficult for somebody so I can pay my salary this week.
That's open to abuse, and that's a problem. That has to be monitored very carefully if you're going to play that game at all. That is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is we now have this fancy lingo. Everything's an enterprise. We don't have a Department of Public Works anymore. We have a Department of Enterprise or whatever. We need to talk plain English, and you're right. There are people who will hammer you, or there are people who will want a few bucks on the side to get out of their way. So I understand that, and that's something that a mayor would have to look at. But that's an administrative job.
All right, man. Maybe that's something, you know, that as Ed Delaney walks around and goes around town, maybe sit down with some of the small business people.
Let me just say one thing.
Yeah.
It's about exterior signs on buildings. You can put up a banner and promote your business. You can't leave those up forever.
I've noticed this. This is a game, isn't it, Dave?
3 or 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Same banner. And then when we put one up, man, 60 days later, get them down or you're going to get fined.
This is a game, and it's a game that I don't like. You're right. We got the same problem with the billboards. We have games. We have billboards, games on these hanging signs. Yeah, some people keep them up forever. Others get them. You're right. We got to be fair about that. And that's the kind of thing that grates on people,
somebody
doesn't it?
Somebody thinks that somebody might be... making it much easier for other people than others.
That's life, isn't it? That's life. And I would not want that to continue, but that is what happens, and it's unfair, and we need to address it.
All right, appreciate it, Dave. Is part of this also, as you're going around and listening, again, fairness, I know some mayors use this line, the city that works for all people, in the sense that the city is not working for all.
Well, that's always a problem, but particularly in this era where a lot of people are hurting financially and their homes are in trouble, their neighborhood's in trouble. We go around with all these programs to rebuild certain homes and to clear off certain homes that need to be torn down, and some people make out and some don't. And that is a big problem. We have limited resources. My good friend Justin Moed in the legislature works very hard to make these things work. And if I'm the mayor, I'll call on people who understand those issues. You're getting a little deep for Ed. And who know how to make it happen, that it doesn't matter what zip code you're in. If you're eligible for a program, you're eligible.
Let me go to Marvin, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi, Marvin. Marvin? Marvin, I can hear you. Marvin going once. Marvin going twice. Marvin lost his place. We moved to Mike right quick. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon to you, Mr. Delaney.
Call me Ed. Good to hear from you, Mike.
They call you Ed. Well, good afternoon to you, Ed. Ed, you know, I've been in this city a long time, to and from other states, but one thing I have noticed over the years, you know, I have criticized churches for not stepping up and doing things in our community, but I want to tell you something. From down there on Washington, in Alabama Street, from the 25th floor, you know, there has been a shortage of outreach in our community. As I look over the years and over the past that I have seen downtown being polished up, and I have seen neighborhoods just being decayed, and, you know, it hurts me to my heart, because not too long ago, over in this show, there was a preacher on there talking about apartment complex that had closed down. Well, 10 years ago, I was trying to get everybody to focus on that side of the community. And but you know, they want to notice after it closed down and it's a vacant building, they want to turn it into a park now. But 10 years ago, I saw children playing in front of this building. It looked like it was in a third world country. You know, and it hurts me.
Mike, there's a lot of that in this city.
Where are those children today? You know what I mean?
Mike, you got it right. It does not help children to live in desperate circumstances in poor environments. I ride my bike a lot, and last fall when I was first thinking about running for mayor, I spent weekend after weekend, and I put some of it on the internet, riding around. We got poverty on the east side, south side, the far west side. We have pockets of it, believe it or not, in Carmel. I learned that to my amazement. And it's not just downtown. Downtown is getting better. Our job is to infect the rest of the city with the success we had downtown.
And Mr. Delaney,
that's tough.
Yeah. Sir,
real quick.
How will you empower our community. All that money's going downtown, the tips and all that. How would you take that money and put it in our community, sir? And well, that is my question to you.
Here's my answer. It's preliminary, but I think you need to pick areas where there's hope, meaning there's a decent population, there's housing stock, not too many places empty. Fall Creek Place is the best example. Up here off of Meridian, just mm-hmm. below Fall Creek on the east side of the street, I drove through there for 35 years, and it was a mess. Mm-hmm. And Mayor Goldsmith sort of put together a lot of the lots, and then Mayor Peterson and the neighborhood housing development people came together, and it started flourishing. And that neighborhood is what I call a healthy cancer, meaning it's spreading by itself without any more money, and it's spreading over towards college. Mm-hmm. Now, that recession stopped it for a while, but it's coming back. So you got to use some judgment and say this place is not so far down that it's hopeless. Put something in there and hope it gets spreading, and it will. They tend to take off. Part of our problem is we don't know when to leave because we had a success. We don't know when there's enough momentum that we don't need to use the city's money anymore. We need to move on to the next place, and that's a judgment call.
239, I appreciate it, Mike. 239-1310. 239-1310 is the afternoon's names. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments. With State Representative Ed Delaney, House District 86, scared all the Republicans away. Even scared libertarians and independents away. Even scared people in Carmel from running against him. And so he's running for mayor as well. It's after this with Amos, after the...
Hello, this is Councilman Joseph Simpson for District 9, and you're listening to the afternoon show with Amos Brown on AM 1310, The Light.
Back to the phones in Kia. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Came in on the caller that was making a comment as far as what about helping kids that are behind in school. Mm-hmm. And I heard the person on the radio with you state that they have this program in place for if they don't pass a certain test by third grade, then they have something in place for that. Mm-hmm. My question is, what about the kids that are past that and that test wasn't in place when that kid was in third grade? Because that's what I'm struggling with now. My child is severely behind and I'm jumping through hurdles trying to figure out how to get him ahead, but he keeps just getting pushed further ahead, but he's far behind.
What grade is he in?
He's in the sixth grade. He's been retained once. They also wanted to retain him again, but because of him having an IEP and stuff like that.
Hold it. You just said the magic word IEP. He has an IEP?
Yes, sir.
Why then are they moving him to the next grade?
I get a whole bunch of malarkey it'd take more than just
All right, hold on. You do understand that in a situation where you have a child in school with an IEP, you as the parent have the right to tell that school, my child is not ready to move to the next grade, and make it as part of the IEP to hold him back another grade. That is your right under the law. And if the school doesn't want to do that, you can complain to the Indiana Department of Education. You drive the IEP train, not the school.
Man, this is it. Can I get?
Well, hold on. Let me let the state representative delay.
Let me give you personal advice based on a lot of years. You need to identify someone in the school system whom you personally trust. And if you don't have someone that you trust, you've got to say, I need to talk to somebody else. You've got to find someone who's not trying to increase their standards by moving your kid up on paper or moving them out of the school. You got to find someone you trust, show them your heart, tell them what your concern is about your child, and have a program that's not just on paper, but one that you believe in and that they believe in. And if you're not talking to someone you trust, you've got to find someone who you do trust.
Ma'am, let me ask you, has he been tested to see where he is in the sixth grade?
Yes, he's currently on a third and a half grade level, and he's in the sixth grade.
I don't want to know the school. What school system are we talking about?
He's IPS.
I tell you what I want to do, because quite honestly, as Ed said, you need somebody to trust, but on the other side of the coin, if the school is bullying you to promote this kid, they're violating state law and, more importantly, federal law in terms of special education. You drive the train. You also have the right in the case conference. You have the right to bring anyone to that case conference you want. You can bring mama, grandma, grandpa, dad, your pastor, your auntie, your cousin, your play aunt. You can bring any adult there with you to stand with you and give you confidence.
Or bring a teacher that you know and trust. Who can help you assess the language, the gobbledygook you might hear from the administration.
Kia, the other thing I would like you to do, because I got a guest coming in after the top of the hour that works for the State Department of Education, what I want to do is put you on hold, and if you would give Drew, the gentleman that talked to you when you called me, if you would give Drew your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, I will give this off the air to my friends from the Department of Education and have them have someone from the Office of Special Education call you.
Okay.
And give you guidance and advice.
Okay, and I want to say this, and I'm not going to say no names, but there was even a time 2 years ago, because I've been fighting this battle for so since basically second grade. I had a fourth grade, that fourth grade IEP person that was over special education at this particular school literally told me out of her mouth that I shouldn't be too concerned about him not reading on grade level, because they're coming up with all these wonderful technology things that's going to help people know how to spell anyway. That's what I was told by IPS worker.
Girl, yeah, you need to talk to my friends at the state, at Glenda Ritz's State Department of Education in special education. They can help you out. So hold on and give Drew, that information off the air that allow me to talk, while we're doing that quickly to Larry at 239-1310. Hi, Larry.
How are you doing, Amos? Hey, you know what the problem is?
What?
The property tax cap. Now, SJR 6 is how it came in, sponsored by Senator Brent Walz. If you read the language in that first draft of that legislation, that statute, you'll see why that was the end of municipal corporations, because it allows them to do anything they can to raise revenue. It actually says that. So we're not going to be able to get around that. And also, it took corporations off the hook for funding the common school system. A tax on the property of corporations can be levied by the General Assembly. They crossed that out of our Constitution, and then they took the connection between education and business away. There was a mandatory connection, and now they got the sales tax now to smooth it out until they can turn us into a Chautauqua model, a model where we're giving our kids a laptop computers and sending them home to do their work. The Planner House cheated. Marcus Robinson cheated. They're segregating black kids. Then they come around and say, hey, you don't qualify. We're shutting your schools. We don't care about the kids that are in the pipeline at your school, because
Larry, I'm running short of time, and now Ed Delaney is now officially initiated as a mayoral candidate, because he's now met you at least via phone.
Larry, here it is. It's real simple. When we voted in the limits on property tax caps, okay, and the limit is a little higher for apartments and higher for business property, but those of us who were thinking said that this will have implications and consequences. We are now facing those. Some people refuse to admit that. We've cut business taxes, you're right. I think that was a separate transaction, but it makes the other party feel good. It wasn't necessary. Our businesses were not whining about their taxes, which overall are very modest in this state. It's time for us to grow up and say there are consequences of protecting homeowners, and that is that you've got to turn to other resources, and we have to do that. The game is over. We've spent down the reserves. The fun is over. We're shrinking our government. Our streets are worse. Our cops are fewer, and our reserves are gone. So, you know, that which we predicted is coming true.
standard thing that at Delaney when we have candidates on, whether they're running this year or next year. If people want more information about your campaign, you're running for not only re-election in House District 86, nobody's running against you, so, but you're running for mayor in 2015. How do people get a hold of you?
EdDelaney.org. Unfortunately, there's two D's that way. EDDELANEY. EdDelaney.org, and that'll take you to all the stuff I've been saying and doing.
Ed Delaney, he's running for the Democratic nomination for mayor of Indianapolis. Good to see you. Thanks very much for
being
with us.
Good to see you, Amos. Thank you very much. Hope to see you again.